70 years ago, the new Czechoslovak government was fully in the hands of the communists. After the Stalinist coup d'etat in February 1948, a wave of arrests started and all democratic opposition was suppressed. Unclassified documents of the US Department of State show the degree of naivety with which the American diplomats and intelligence officers in Prague faced their communist opponents and the subsequent shocking realization that there was nothing they could do. Vít Pohanka has more.
Right after the Second World War, everything seemed fine between the United States and Czechoslovakia. True, the Prague communist-led government nationalized most industries and companies and wasn't willing to compensate American investors and owners. Yes, there were the occasional attacks on the decadent Western imperialists in the leftist press. But the country was generally free, definitely more so than, say, neighboring Poland or Hungary, not to mention the Balkan states. For the US Department of State, Czechoslovakia definitely seems to be an interesting diplomatic laboratory, explains history professor Igor Lukeš of the Boston University, author of the book On the Edge of the Cold War, American Diplomats and Spies in Postwar Prague.
If the Czechs manage in post-World War II Czechoslovakia to coexist with Stalin, we'll know that it can be done. But if even Czechoslovakia, this country that although democratic, is very close to Stalin's Soviet Union and has done everything in its power to indicate so, if even that country were to be ultimately driven into the camp of Stalin's colonies, then we'll know that peaceful coexistence is not possible.
The American embassy in Prague was led by Lawrence Steinhardt, a successful New York lawyer and diplomat with the first-hand experience from Stalin's Moscow, where he had served as an ambassador when the World War II started. Yet he and his team in Prague completely failed to understand the seriousness of the communist threat. Igor Lukeš attributes that to their inability to gather valuable and trustworthy intelligence.
The United States was a newcomer when it came to intelligence. Countries like Russia had decades and decades of tradition. The Tsarist intelligence, the Okhrana, was a very sophisticated operation. The British, of course, had conducted intelligence for a very, very long time. By contrast, the United States was a completely open country. Everything could be found. All information was available. People's salaries were printed in when they were civil servants or when they were foreign service officers. Their salaries would be printed in public bulletins. So for the Americans to start gathering intelligence against the Soviet or Soviet-style adversary like the Czechs was initially a very, very difficult challenge, because the only experience with information gathering that the Americans had had was during World War II. And wartime intelligence and peacetime intelligence are two completely separate style of activities.
It is no wonder then that Ambassador Steinhardt wasn't even in Prague when the storm started to gather at the beginning of 1948. He was on one of his prolonged leaves in America, where he mostly took care of his own law firm. It was his deputy, John Bruins, who warned Washington that something was up. The unclassified diplomatic dispatches from Prague offer a unique revelation of what the Americans knew, or rather didn't know, of what was coming.
Prague, January 28th, 1948, 10 a.m. As indicated in recent telegrams from embassy, communist drive has begun for 51% majority in Czechoslovakia election campaign, culminating early in May. Full propaganda advantage being taken of liberation of most of Czechoslovakia by Soviet army, and also of much-needed grain deliveries, which are now arriving from east. On other hand, there is great deal of goodwill among Czech people toward Western democracies, including US. I believe 80% of Czech people favour Western-style democracy over communism. But expediency and timidity render most of them inarticulate.
When Washington started paying full attention, the artificial government crisis that eventually led to the communist takeover was already in full swing. There was a massive disinformation campaign. Key ministries, mass media and factories were already controlled by armed communist agents. George Marshall, the US Secretary of State himself, was obviously deeply worried as he sent following message to the US Embassy in Paris.
Washington, February 24, 1948, 7 p.m. We are concerned at the probable repercussions in Western European countries of a successful communist coup in Czechoslovakia without challenge or consequences. We feel that there is a real possibility that such a development in Czechoslovakia would stimulate and encourage communist action in Western European countries, particularly in Italy.
But the next day, everything was over.
Pan prezident všechny mé návrhy přesně tak, jak byly podány, přijal.
The communist prime minister Klement Gottwald announced that the president Edvard Beneš, who had done so much to appease Stalin, finally accepted all communists' demands. The US ambassador to London, Lewis Douglas, met the British foreign secretary Ernest Bevin. He sent this telegram to George Marshall a few hours after Gottwald's victorious speech in Prague.
London, February 25th, 1948, 8 p.m. after meeting Ernest Bevin, Foreign Secretary. He expressed great concern over the developments in Czechoslovakia and informed me that he'd been giving serious consideration during the course of the last 2 days to the steps, if any, which Her Majesty's government might take in collaboration with US. He had come to the tentative conclusion that we were impotent in the matter and that the mere filing of a protest against or otherwise challenging the communist coup in Czechoslovakia would, unless we could take positive steps, merely reveal our weakness in the situation, which he regretted very much indeed.
Lawrence Steinhardt finally arrived in Prague when the communist takeover was a fait accompli and could only sum up what had happened.
Prague, February 26, 1948, 4 p.m. The communists, as a result of long and careful preparations dating back to acceptance of the Marshall Plan in July 1947, by intimidation and demonstration of armed force, have succeeded in seizing the government and eliminating all opposition. They are now endeavouring to cover up a ruthless seizure of power by inclusion in the new cabinet of left-wing socialist democrats, stooges and quislings from the non-communist parties, all of whom will do their bidding. In short, they've employed identical methods to achieve a successful putsch, which were first employed by the Nazis and subsequently by the communists in other satellite states.
Left March, that was one of the official popular communist marching songs of the day. And so it did. Democratic, non-communist politicians, military officers and business people started disappearing. Abroad, if they were lucky and acted quickly, into prisons, if they hesitated. Especially tragic was the fate of Jan Masaryk, the Minister of Foreign Affairs and the son of the first Czechoslovak president Tomáš Masaryk, and in a way a symbolic figure of free Czechoslovakia. Ambassador Lawrence Steinhardt had the opportunity to see the tragedy with his own eyes.
Masaryk had tears in his eyes while seeking to justify his own continuance in a government of which he frankly admitted the communists had seized control. He said he'd already saved about 250 people and intimated that his decision to remain in the government, as he put it temporarily, had been prompted by the faint hope that he would be able to soften the impact of communist ruthlessness for a short time and perhaps aid others in leaving the country.
But before Red Victory rallies had ended, The conscience of the Czech people was abruptly sobered by the sudden and mysterious death of the popular son of the nation's founder and its foreign minister, Jan Masaryk.
A few days later, on the 10th of March 1948, Jan Masaryk was found dead in his pajamas under the bathroom window of his flat in the courtyard of the foreign ministry. Ambassador Steinhardt could not but speculate in his diplomatic telegram.
Prague, March 10th, 1948, 6 p.m. It's difficult to escape the conclusion that Masaryk's suicide this morning may have been connected with talk he may have had yesterday with Beneš. It seems probable that Masaryk had hoped until yesterday that Beneš had evolved a plan or course of action which would permit Masaryk to retain his self-respect. Having regard to reports from reliable sources that Beneš yesterday was determined to resign, it's possible that Masaryk then saw no other alternative than to take his own life.
The swiftness with which Czechoslovakia fell under the heavy boot of Stalinism might have surprised the Americans at the time. But with the benefit of hindsight, the fate of Czechoslovakia was probably sealed nearly a year earlier, says historian Igor Lukesh.
Well, it seems to me that the point of no return was reached when the Czechs rejected the Marshall Plan, because many people would know, Prague, together with other East European countries, had tentatively, initially, accepted the offer of the Marshall Plan. And When the government was then summoned, as if they were somehow misbehaving schoolboys, summoned to Stalin's Kremlin and there lectured and badgered, really, by Stalin and forced to renounce their initial acceptance of the Marshall Plan, I think that was the point of no return. If people like Masaryk and so on didn't find enough courage to dispute Stalin's arguments in the Kremlin, it was, I think, a signal that they would not be able to resist their own communists a few months later.
Be it as it may, the events in Prague 70 years ago truly opened the eyes of the West and especially the United States. Now they knew for sure who they were dealing with.
And this is why the communist coup d'etat in February 1948 was such a turning point in the history of the evolving Cold War, because it fully supported those in Washington who had been saying for some time that a peaceful coexistence with Stalin was not possible. And therefore, the United States in 1949, basically a year after the communist takeover in Prague, joined an already existing organization and helped establish NATO, which would ultimately freeze the Cold War balance of power, but it would also militarize the initially ideological conflict between the East and West.
Says Igor Lukesh, professor of international relations and history, Boston University. And even though it might be of little consolation for the generations of Czechs and Slovaks who spent most of their productive lives in the dreary reality of communism, it is also an interesting paradox worth remembering. The victory of communists in Czechoslovakia in 1948 led directly to the founding of NATO. And that was the organization that provoked the Soviet Union and its satellites into such a military and armament frenzy that in turn helped to crush their weak economies and led to the fall of communism itself, even though it was only decades later.